Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to a special edition of American Statesman Blog Talk Radio. I've been calling Wednesday nights our special edition because our regular schedule is Mondays and Thursdays, but we're starting to do an awful lot of Wednesdays, so Wednesday may become the new normal. Tonight, as you know, American Statesman is the place. It's all about duty, honor, and country, and today is Wednesday, June 27, 2012. My name is Sally Baptist, and I'll be hosting the show tonight. And my co-host is Judy Frankel. She's going to be talking about TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a.k.a. NAFTA on steroids. So we're going to have a very good discussion about that, and you need to know what this really means. It's just unbelievable, and of course, the second part that's unbelievable, or not surprising, but unbelievable, is that the media hasn't told you squat about it. No one is out there talking. You know, our country is being sold out from under us, given away out from under us, and the freedom of the press media thing does nothing for us. They were supposed to be the watchdogs. They were supposed to be the ones that were going to get all the facts and make sure that they kept an eye on what the government was doing. But I think we all know that has not been the case. And so please, please do not depend on what the mainstream media tells you. Go out there and do your own homework. Listen to talk shows such as this. Find out the topics, and then go do your own research, too. You don't have to believe what we're saying here. What we're saying is because we've done the research, we found out what was going on, and we want you to know about it, and then you can go do your own work and make your own decisions. But just do not depend on that squawk box, idiot box, whatever you want to call it, of news media to tell you what is going on. Before we get started on that, I've got a couple of quick updates, just things I kind of wanted to mention to go along with. You know, this is just more of this totally government out of control, government that has no obligation to its people. It doesn't care about us. It doesn't care about we the sheeple out here. And, I mean, tomorrow is the big day with Obamacare. You know, I can only imagine. Tomorrow is just going to be a historic day no matter how you look at it, one way or the other, whichever way it comes out. And if it doesn't come out the way the people are wanting, and I'm not even sure, you know, the riots, are there going to be riots tomorrow? I don't know that. I'm just thinking and speculating with the tension that has been all around Obamacare and the outrage people have about this out-of-control government, that I just try to imagine what tomorrow is going to bring. And then the other part of Obamacare, I mean, to me, there's nothing more disgusting than have a Supreme Court judge, Alina Kagan in this case, who literally worked on the policy, Obamacare, who literally worked on writing the defense for it when it got challenged. She knew it was going to get challenged. So when she was Inspector General, she was out there working on this thing on both sides of it, and she sits there in judgment of it. It is so unethical. It is so much a violation of any kind of judicial process. And it's also a violation of her fiduciary duties to us. We'll talk about that a lot tomorrow, too. The other thing, at the same time as all this is going on, we have a president who thinks it's okay to give seven Alaskan islands to our good old friend over in Russia, Putin. These are islands that are rich with fossil fuels, and it's our property. It's our country. And he says, here, take it. We don't need it anymore. You have it. You get the oil off it. We're not going to do it. I'm not going to let the people of America be sufficient on their own oil and energy supplies. So we'll give it to you, Russia. Who cares? And all those different jokes of Sarah Palin saying she could see Russia. Well, now she can if they're given seven Alaskan islands to Russia. Another disgusting thing that you don't hear about in the media. And then couple things here a little bit more locally to Orange County and to Florida. Orange County, there's a group of Hispanics in Orange County, Florida, that are filing some kind of suit against the county because they want to gerrymander the districts to make sure that they're allowed to elect so many Hispanic people. This is the Amerifobe we were talking about on Monday's show. This is Amerifobe to the max. These are Latinos, Hispanics, who hate America. They don't want to be part of America. They want to be Latino, South America, Mexico, wherever, but they don't want to be Americans. They want their leadership. They want their representation. They're segregation. They want segregation. They are anti-American. They don't want to be Americans. They don't want to vote for an American. They want to vote for Hispanic. And so this is a whole other mess. We might talk about that some tomorrow. And then this one here, good old Governor Scott. You know, Governor Scott, there's been all the fuss about the Holder trying to block Governor Scott from cleaning up the voter registration rolls. You know, Holder thinks it's okay for dead people to vote. He thinks it's okay for illegals who are not eligible to vote. A lot of the illegals aren't really against the law. You know, it's not a crime to be illegal kind of thing. So there's all this fuss, and Governor Scott's been out there fighting to correct this wrong, and rightly so. We should have eligible people voting, not anybody and not dead people. At the same time, Governor Scott, shortly after he got in office, he wrote an executive order in putting in place E-Verify, saying, yes, Florida companies would use E-Verify. His executive order now, okay? Well, today, yesterday, within the last few days, it's been reported that Governor Scott is on record saying, oh, don't worry about E-Verify, we're not going to enforce it. He puts in the executive order and says, oh, I don't care about my executive order, just ignore it. The guy's nuts. There is no rule of law in the United States of America. We have to say that out loud. There is no rule of law. And when we talk about TPP, this Trans-Pacific Partnership, we're going to see how much the rule of law truly has gone down the tubes, or it's going down the tubes even more so. It's so disgusting. So, you know, there's so many things going on. We really do need to stop talking and to take action. People have to actually get engaged and do something. Last Thursday, we had a show saying, time to take action, time to stop talking. And we're going to be promoting that much more here on American Statesman Blog Talk Radio. As most of you know, Charlie and I have filed a complaint with the FBI. It's called We the People versus the Ballot Box Establishment. And it's an investigation of the violations of the Sherman Antitrust Act, the Clayton Act, the Hobbs Act, various things, illegal monopolies of the two-party system, the Republican Party and the Democrat Party, in collusion with various governmental agencies and the media, have actually denied us the right to elect the people, the representation of our choice. The majority of Republicans do not want Mitt Romney. It's obvious to it. You go out there across the board. The Republican Party itself and conservatives, American people, are not excited about Mitt Romney. And those who are totally disgusted with Obama, and then they see the Republican Party putting Mitt Romney, forcing Mitt Romney on them. And there's actually a lawsuit against the Republican National Committee for forcing and intimidating the delegates of the Republican Party to make them elect or put him as the nominee for the presidency. Shows, again, how corrupt the system is, how we do not have the representation of our choice. And if we don't take action and do something about this, it's going to get worse. Charlie and I did file the complaint with the FBI. We filed it on May 4th of this year. We've heard nothing from the FBI. Absolutely no response. They haven't told us to go take a flying leap. They haven't said they were doing something with it. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. We still ask people to continue to call the FBI offices and ask about it and place your own complaint. Make your own formal complaint about it. But Charlie and I are going to be setting up a date to go back to the FBI office here in Maitland. And we're looking at July 17th. And we are going to be asking people in the area, in the Central Florida area, or anybody, if you can take the time, the more the merrier. We want to go down to, as a group, as the voters, go down to the FBI office and say, what are you doing with our complaint? Because it wasn't just Charlie and I who signed on to it. We have petitions for it with other people who said they supported the effort. And we need to go down there and say, okay, we were here 2 months ago. We haven't heard from you. What are you doing about this? It's obviously illegal monopolies. You obviously have the authority to investigate the actions of these two parties. You have a fiduciary duty to serve the people. What are you doing? And so we're going to be getting some information out there, and we'll talk more about this tomorrow on tomorrow's show, to get people involved. We need to know that you're going to be there with us. And after we do this, then we'll do what we have to do next. We're going to keep working on this. We're not going to drop it. The FBI can think they can ignore us, but we're not going away. So, but obviously there's power in numbers. If we have a group of us going down there, it'll be much more effective than just the two of us going down there. So we are going to be asking people to join us, send us an email, tell us that you're willing to participate. We'll get into more of the details tomorrow night. We'll let you know about that. And on that note, that is the only updates I've got for now. Charlie Klein is also going to be with us co-hosting tonight. And I see he is out there. We'll give him a quick hello out there and see what's going on, and then we're going to get to Judy and TPP. Hey, Charlie, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. I've been sending out some fiduciary information to some people who have been emailing me regarding some complaints against Pelosi. So the word fiduciary violations is getting out there just like Tom wanted it to get out there, and he's going to be working on the governor. So I think things are starting to perk up, because once people find out that the breach of a fiduciary duty can be handled in a court of law, and there are compensatory, how would you say, solutions to it for that would be good for we the people. I mean, especially, I would just love to find a congressman or any elected official who made quite a few million dollars while sitting in our seat representing we the people, and he or she did insider trading, which is illegal because, after all, I mean, Martha Stewart went to jail for it.
Well, that's already been addressed. They've made a new regulation for them, but while they were doing it, they said it was okay, but I think it goes back to the fiduciary duty. They weren't
that's
representing
right.
us. They were representing their own interest.
Yeah, and fiduciary duty is on the books longer than this insider trading is, so I'll tell you what. What do they say in the judges always say, two wrongs don't make a right. You know, and the law is the law is the law. And there is nothing in the Constitution that exempts Congress or anybody, including the President or the Supreme Court, from adjudication in a court of law. There's nothing that gives them complete and total, how would you say, above the law status.
Well,
so,
that's
so when they violate,
especially if anybody follows the rule of law. Remember, it's not a crime to be illegal in this country anymore.
Well, yeah, well, that's a violation of the law, and whoever goes ahead and agrees with that is in violation of the law. You know, we could wind up with never have to worry about the border fence, because we can put all of our elected and appointed officials across there, and they could be the guards. 2,000 miles of elected officials. Guarding the border and stopping all the illegal drugs coming in and the illegal aliens. Now, then we would have jobs for illegal aliens. We could turn them into make everybody a citizen, because we have so many elected officials down there on the border. I think that would be a great thing. And Joe Arpaio could build a tent prison for us, all the way from California to Texas. But that would be a great thing.
If he's building a tent prison, whatever you want to call it, for the elected public servants down there, I will go help him.
Well, I think there will be thousands of people down there helping
him. Yeah. Well, anyway.
Okay, let's go with our guest.
Okay, now let me go. Well, you'll be chiming in from time to time, and we're going to show how this TPP fits in with everything else we're talking about, a totally out-of-control government and truly no rule of law. Rule of law, it's a farce anymore.
Well,
so
that's why
that,
we have to file all these deals, and put me on
okay,
the mute. Mute me, please. Okay.
I'm going to mute Charlie. Just remember, he said I could mute him. I'll open the line up for you later. I'll give you a chance to talk later. Okay, on that note, now I will go to our guest host, Judy Frankel. And Judy hosted a show for me a while back. This was a few months back on for the Go candidates. So welcome back, and please tell us what is going on with TPP. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your website, where people can get information, and all that good stuff, and let's get into this Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Hi, Sally. Thank you so much for having me on tonight. you know, before I get started, I want people to know what I'm going to tell you is going to upset you a lot. So you have to know that we also have solutions for what to do about it. And so we're not going to always be complaining. We're going to also point you in the right direction to where you can do something as a citizen and as a voter this November. So what is the TPP? Oh, first of all, rightindependent.org, I founded it because I was frustrated with both parties, and I felt that we needed some alternative to the two-party system. And by the way, when we talk about parties, I'm talking about parties as though they were corporations. They're run like businesses, and they shut you out if you want to have a unique voice. They only really represent their interests. And so in a way, you could say the Republicans are like alcoholics drunk with filibuster power, but the Democrats are the enablers who let Dad get drunk and concede every to his every wish eventually because they have no power. So I'm not saying that Democrats and Republicans are bad. I'm saying that parties are bad. So I just want to clarify that. So getting into the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and why these trade agreements like GATT and NAFTA and the Free Trade Area of the Americas, why they're so bad. Basically, it's corporations putting together a document that benefits them and doesn't so much benefit the people. And in this case, the Pacific Rim nations, Australia, Brunei, Chile, Malaysia, New Zealand, Peru, and Singapore, they've already signed on to this. But it's an open agreement, which means any country can sign on at any time. It's open-ended, and it doesn't matter. There's no restriction on when you can join. So why would you join this? Well, the people who have put this together are 600 U.S. corporations. They call them trade advisors. They are doing this in secret, basically making it impossible for people to have a voice, and they're calling themselves sponsor nations, or basically they're corporations. So the offshoring corporations, global banks, aggregate business, and pharmaceutical giants basically want this deal to go because it gives them the ultimate power over our governmental rules. And basically what they have done is they've constructed a three-attorney tribunal that will be hosted by World Bank or the IMF. And this tribunal has the ultimate say in what goes on with trade agreements, so what goes on in trade. So basically they are judge and jury. And they can go into any country and say, for example, a country like El Salvador is going through this right now. They have gold in their country. So the gold mining companies come in, and if the people there say, well, we don't want the cyanide and mercury that comes along with your mining, they can sue not the people but the government of the country and have that tribunal basically say, well, now you owe $77 million from the National Treasury as compensation for lost profits to, say, for example, Pacific Rim, which is actually a case that's going on between a Canadian company and the country of El Salvador. So what is the country going to be able to do? Well, if judge and jury is the tribunal, the country is, what's the chances of them winning? Nothing. I mean, it kind of reminds me of my husband saying when he was a kid, his brother and he pretended to be judge and jury, and his sister was the plaintiff. And when the plaintiff, whenever the plaintiff got in front of the judge and jury, well, she never won. Guess why? Because she had no clue what they were doing. They had all the power, she had none. So So this is basically what we're putting ourselves into that position by signing on to this agreement. Any country can come up against the federal government, sue us, and say, you're standing in the way of us making profits. And it's not just in mining. It's in internet usage. It's in seeds. It's in companies that have effluent. So if we have any kind of regulations that prevents them from dumping or offloading external externalities, they can sue us for having regulations against that kind of effluent. So, you know, just like they're doing in countries like El Salvador, they're dumping cyanide and mercury into the water supply. Those multinational companies can come in and now sue our federal government. But it's worse than that. They can actually, when they win, and they will, we have to pay for the bill. We have to foot the bill for our standing in the way of them making profits. So, for example, NAFTA has the same basic rule now. If a country that signed on to NAFTA is, if a small community is rising up against a company and showing their displeasure for them ruining their environment, then the company can come up against that country. And so far, over $350 million in compensation has already been paid out to corporations in a series of investor state cases under the NAFTA-style deals. So this TPP is more of the same, only the difference now is this tribunal is only three attorneys. Now, wouldn't you love to have that job if you were an attorney, where you get to be judge and jury for this company that is basically paying your way to rape a country? I mean, it's basically rape. Only they're making it so that they're allowed to do it. So I don't know why these trade agreements really, they saw them as a way to go into countries and take advantage of them. And they call it something really sweet and kind, like free trade agreement. But really what it is they're manipulating the law so that they have all these rights that are above the rights of the government under which they are suing. So it's like they've just decided they're going to be in charge of the world, and this is how they're doing it, bit by bit. They're creating these trade agreements. Now, I want you to know it's not just about environmental stuff. It's about the internet access as well. They are putting more restrictions on who can use the copyrights, and then they get to, this is the beauty of the whole thing, they get to kind of like rewrite the rules on copyright, because if their country, if the corporation's country is outside of our borders, they can impose their copyright laws on us. So if they have an unlimited year copyright, they can continue to reap the copyright benefits ad infinitum. Okay, so an example of this is with medicines. In this country, after like 26 years, you can then start producing generic drugs, and the price for drugs drives way down because we have what's called free trade, or not free trade, but we have a help me out here, Sally. Companies compete with each other, and it drives the price down because, you know,
yeah,
we're
supposed to be a free market. Free market.
Free market. Thank you. It's supposed to be a free market in this country. But what we're using by this quote free trade agreement, which is anything but free trade, is it's making it possible for companies who have the patents on these drugs to say, you can no longer produce a generic that competes with us because we're losing profits. See, that's the onus of responsibility is for them, as long as they can prove that they're losing profits as a result of something we're doing, they can sue our government. Does that, I mean, if it doesn't make sense to you, go to publicwatch.org, because the woman who is, I would say, one of the premier experts on trade agreements in this country, her name's Lori Wallach, W-A-L-L-A-C-H. She's the director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. And she's read through, now I have to tell you, this document for the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, is 26 chapters long, and only one of the chapters has been, quote, leaked. And it's not because it's been leaked so much as the gentleman who's in charge of our trade agreements, the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, his name is, let me get this right. While I'm looking that up, I'm going to say to you that this document is much longer than the piece that got leaked. So out of 26 documents, only one. And if you can just imagine that the part that got leaked is the part about copyrights and internet usage and trade law, you know, infringement of being able to make a profit, you can just imagine the 25 chapters that aren't being leaked yet, how much worse they could be. I mean, they're really writing themselves a check, like the most enormous check you can imagine. And this is such a power grab. But the thing that really gets me the most is, and this is where you really can see no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats, is that the negotiations have been taking place for Trans-Pacific throughout the Obama presidency. He's not only not against it, he's actually for it. The deal is strongly supported by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I'm reading right off of an article here. The top lobbying group for American corporations. So the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is all fine with this because, of course, they represent the American corporations. But here's the deal. Mitt Romney has urged the U.S. to finalize the deal as soon as possible. So in other words, he's saying, let's just do it. Let's just get it over with.
You know, and this is why, you know, I tell people Mitt Romney isn't that much different than Obama. You know, Ron Paul was the only one out there who really represented something different. And if we would have had just if the Republican Party had not been so corrupt and the media would have given Ron Paul any even one-tenth of the time that they gave Mitt Romney, this whole thing would be totally different. And, you know, we the people are the ones who are going to lose when it's not Ron Paul out there. And, I mean, in the chat room somebody was asking about Ron Paul. And technically Ron Paul has not withdrawn. Forget what Rand Paul said. Rand Paul has gone to the dark side in many respects. I won't say he's totally gone to the dark side, but he's now in bed with the GOP. Don't ask me what he's trying to do over there. I'm not going to try to figure that out. But his father said on Morning Joe, MSNBC, last week, yes, I am still campaigning. I will always be campaigning. I don't know whether I'm going to get to speak at the event or not. They haven't invited me. But we're going to have an event. We are going to have an event one way or another. We're going to talk about liberty. So,
I'm glad to hear that because I have news for you. There's only right now there's 8 states in the union that don't allow write-in votes. But we could win a presidency on write-in votes alone if we got enough buy-in. So this is really what I'm hoping for. I mean, we may not win the presidency this time. I'm really focusing on Congress to try to change Congress out. But I still think that what we need to get out as a message to people is that they shouldn't give up on booting out both Obama and Romney, that they should remember that their vote belongs to them. And I'm gonna address the problem of vote tampering, and you know, that problem from the standpoint of we don't know if our votes are getting counted. Well, we actually know that they've been tampered with. So, and in some districts, it's egregious, the violations against the voter fraud. So what I'm going to recommend as it gets closer to the election time is that we do a grassroots backup exit poll. And the backup exit poll will be handled either by, like, the League of Women Voters, which I'm going to recommend this weekend because I'm meeting with them here in Los Angeles. They have an annual meeting. And I'm going to suggest that in some of these very contentious districts, especially where the people are not feeling represented, that we go ahead and do an exit poll. What do you think of that, Sally?
I think it's excellent to have a true independent organization doing a tally on it, too, and see what's happening. Because as the saying goes, it's not who votes, it's not who places the vote, it's who counts the vote or whatever. I think I hose that up, but it's who counts the vote that counts.
Right, and if we can't trust our government, why should we be trusting them with our votes? I mean, that's really, we have come to a point in time where I feel there is more distrust of our government than ever before. And the funny thing is, it's backfiring on the media. The media thinks that they're going to get you to, the media wants you to believe whatever they want you to believe. But ultimately, it's going to backfire on them when they realize that they're telling us to distrust our own government. So what I'm suggesting to people is to vote for the non-incumbent, first of all. First, I want to go over the incumbents, by the way, because not all of them are bad, okay? I'm not saying incumbent, just get them out. What I'm saying is look at their voting record. And if they voted with the corporations and against the people in your district, you definitely want to look at alternatives. And that's why I started writeindependent.org to give people the alternative. And on top of that, Sally, since the last time I talked to you, I got 34 people signed on to this Pledge for Honest Candidates that I devised. Basically, the Pledge for Honest Candidates takes the money out of the equation. It says that they won't take any more than the FEC limit, $2,500, from any person or entity. So they can't, and they can't take $2,500 in benefit. So if it's, that means super PACs, you're gone, okay? But not only that, once they get into office, they have to pass a bill that is the same force and effect as the pledge. So basically, I'm taking Grover Norquist right from his playbook, and I'm using that as a force for good, you know? So instead of the Pledge for No Taxes, I mean, the Pledge for No Taxes did what it was supposed to do. I'm just saying this one is a pledge to take money out of politics. And not only can they not take money for their campaign in excess of what the FEC ruling was, they also can't do the revolving door. So they themselves can't take jobs with lobbyist firms, and their family and their friends, their acquaintances can't take jobs because a lot of it, it wouldn't matter if they got the job or not if they were setting their family up for a sweet deal. So what I'm saying is anything that's in the realm of conflict of interest, that should be punishable by law. They are going to lose their seat in Congress if they do any of this reprehensible behavior that is basically bribery. If they've been bribed and we can prove it, basically they go to jail. I mean, we're not standing for it anymore. I don't know why we stood for it for so long, but finally.
We weren't paying attention. We weren't paying any attention. We weren't feeling any pain. The majority of people weren't feeling pain. You know, they had their job and they were watching the Super Bowl and, you know, the life is good routine and not paying any attention to how we were being destroyed little by little. All the pieces that happened, yes.
I want to address that destroyed little by little thing. Now, back in 1999, the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act took away the last vestiges of the Glass-Steagall Act. And as you know, Glass-Steagall was the thing that kept our economy stable. It prevented a boom and bust cycle that was out of control, the same boom and bust that we're suffering from right now. Well, why did the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act pass? Because the people in Congress were bribed by the banksters who basically said, if you pass this, we're going to have a heyday, and I'll tell you how to make money. And then they used it to create this derivatives market, the credit default swap, which is, by the way, is a huge bubble that's going that still hasn't burst yet. So I'm warning people out there, if you have any money in derivatives, or if you don't know what your money is invested in, find out from your financial planner, because you need to pull out of derivatives now. Otherwise, when they finally do fall apart, there won't be anybody to pay on those promises. So here's what I wanted to tell you, is you still have people in your Floridian Senate and in your House of Representatives, and I'll go district by district, who's still in office that signed the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, you guys. Okay, district number one, Jeff Miller. District number three, Corrine Brown. District number six, Cliff Stearns. District number 10, C.W. Young. District number 14, Connie Mack. District 18, Ileana Ross-Lehtinen. I'm not sure if I'm butchering her name, but let's just say Ross-Lehtinen, and you can figure it out from there. And then District 21, Mario Diaz-Balart. And lastly, your District 23, Alcee Hastings. Okay, so those people are incredibly, you know, guilty of selling us down the river. And don't let them tell you they didn't know what they were doing. They are smart people. They got all the way to Capitol Hill. They knew what they were signing when they signed this document that sold us down the river and made derivatives completely, you know, not transparent anymore. Nobody is accountable, and left the you know, United States government to back up when these banks failed, because they were basically gambling with our money. So if you have any of those representatives, I hope you listen, or you can teach some of the people in your district to listen to the fact that these people actually created that housing crisis that we're still suffering from. And that we're still having derivatives market. There's a derivatives market that is over $700 trillion of bubble that is going to burst. And nobody is reining it in, least of all Obama. Because if someone reined it in and said, okay, we're just not going to pay on those derivatives anymore, all the hedge fund people who are still making scads of money off of it, well, it's not going to be pretty.
Let me ask you a question. On that vote, when you were listing the Florida candidates that voted for it, when was that actually voted on? What year was
1999. All you have to do is look up the Graham-Leach Bliley Act. That's GraamLeachBliley. Anyway, the Graham-Leach Bliley, and the three Republicans basically who drafted that agreement.
Yeah,
but,
a couple of them I know.
Lot of them were Democrats that I mentioned. There's
Corrine.
I'm telling you, the Democrats are just as guilty as the Republicans for passing that. And you know who was president then? Clinton signed it. So he was in on it too.
Yeah,
I mean, they were all in on
it.
In fact, this was a 20-year process. They actually took away bit by bit, the Glass-Steagall protections.
Yeah.
So it
well,
was the
did.
Last nail in the coffin, this Gramm-Leach-Spiley. There were others that preceded it that did some damage to Glass-Steagall also.
Well, there's a key point. Corrine Brown, she's still out there. She's one of the Democrats. She and I know the majority of those you said were Republicans, but I happen to know she's a fossil of D.C. that needs to go. But the other one that's really
Elsie Hastings is a Democrat also.
Yeah.
Am I saying the name
sure
right, Elsie?
Yeah. That sounds right, but I'm not sure how long they've been out there. I know that Corrine Brown has been out there forever. The part that I think is really interesting for Florida voters right now is good old Connie Mack. You know. And,
oh, that's the other person who signed it.
Well, he's running for the Senate. He wants to take Bill Nelson's place for the U.S. Senate. He's been in Congress forever. He's a family career politician. And unfortunately, Rand Paul has endorsed him, which is saying a little bit more and more about Rand Paul. But it's like, people, would you remember that this is what Connie Mack is doing? Connie Mack is another rhino. It's totally disgusting. We do have a caller who's got a question.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Okay, we'll go to the caller in just a second here, but I want to make sure for others, because I don't think I actually did announce it. If you have a question you want to ask on the air, just call 347-857-4364, and make sure you press 1 to be placed in the host queue. If you don't press 1, I won't know that you want to speak on the air. And this person is trying to hide their identity by having the last 4 digits of their phone be 1111. Caller, you're on the air, and can you give us your first name, please?
Yes, are you talking to me now?
I'm talking to you.
Excellent. My name's Marty, and I'm on your chat blog, and I also left a short film at the bottom of your blog there, and I appreciate your show. And I have more of a comment than a question. It's just that the situation our country faces right now is very, very grave, and the situation that's being created is pitting our children against the economies of communist and socialist countries. And I realize there's not many people out there probably listening to this, but those who are, the film that I took time to put together at the bottom of the page, I used to lobby for the United Auto Workers. I since don't share their views any longer, so it's important to recognize that. But I'm very well versed on the free trade laws and all the rest going on. The Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act I was unaware of. I'm not very well versed on that one, so I've got some reading that I've got to take and look into and do. But it's important that your listeners understand that in 2004, our Congress allowed the companies that moved overseas. Now, this was just 2004. Since 2004, a zillion other companies have taken and left America. But in 2004, there was a Job Repatriation Act, is what they called it, that went through Congress, and both parties, both the Democrats and the Republicans equally, signed on to this bill that allowed those companies that moved overseas, allowed them an 85% tax break on the money that they owed the American government. We were a country at war at that time. And, I mean, it's absolutely mind-blowing. I never thought I'd see this day come in America where our own politicians were bought out by the interests of business.
And I got to add to that, I know Marco Rubio, his name pops up as like this great leader, but I have to tell you.
Not in my book.
Okay, he actually welcomes the TPP. He urged President Obama to support Mexico's inclusion in it. In other words, let's sell Mexico down the river, because it's bad for any country to sign this thing. You know, it's basically saying the country is no longer sovereign. It belongs to the corporations. The corporations can run roughshod over the country. So
absolutely.
Mark Rubio says, go ahead, take Mexico. I don't think he's being very friendly to Mexico. But let me tell you the words he uses, because he's very good at spin. He says, this is a statement, quote, Mexico's inclusion in the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations is a welcome step that will ultimately help strengthen the friendship and economic ties that bind our nations. Mexico's participation in TPP will further promote the priorities of the Americas and more strongly grow the economies of the United States and our Pacific allies. What a bunch of bull.
You see how he
spins it? And you know what? I have news for you. When a person says stuff like that, I have to look between the lines now, because I don't believe anything these guys say anymore. That's why you have to research. You have to know what bills are being passed. This is the thing that I just think is beautiful. All you have to do to see how the corporations are trying to rule our country is read the bills. Read the bills they want to pass. And the longer the bill, the more omnibus this thing is, the more suspect you should be, because they don't want you to read it. If it's 26 chapters long, you better believe it's stacked in their favor. And I'm not talking about small corporations. I'm talking about enormous ones, the monopolies, the ones that know that when they move into a country and they want to mine it, they're going to say, we're going to create jobs. Of course they're going to create jobs while they're raping the country. So you have to ask, is it worth it to have a job today if my children are going to be sick tomorrow? What's the cost involved?
It's far, far worse than that. What's going on now, all right, they label these things, like you said, free trade, and, you know, things that sound very sweet and innocent before the American public. I was thrown off of eBay. I carved pistol grips, and there was a foreign competitor that was producing the same grip as what I was producing. Now, you figure eBay, there's nothing more free market than eBay, right? Well, they tossed me off their website because this guy in Thailand complained that I sold too many pairs of pistol grips. Now, along with pistol grips, I also do some pretty fancy carvings. I invented a machine basically that acts like a CNC mill, even though it's not. It's what they call a carving duplicator. But what's going on is that when I export my goods to China, maybe there's some carving that I have that a Chinese guy likes a real lot that he sees on eBay. My carving sells for $5 here in America. I could sell you that carving for $5 here. But when I put this carving in the mail and send it to China, China takes and imposes a 700% tariff on this thing, and that carving becomes $35.
Well, who gets the difference?
The Chinese government.
Right.
Well, so what's important to understand for your listeners is that China, when they send their stuff here, they pay absolutely no tariff on it whatsoever when it hits the American shores. So you've basically got a business in China that pays no employment-related taxation to their government. They don't have unemployment there. They don't have Social Security there. They don't have OSHA there. They don't have the EPA there. So anything they make is pure profit. The companies that manufacture don't pay taxes on the goods, on the raw materials that they make their finished product off of. So when you walk through Walmart and you walk through Harbor Freight and I hate to mention companies by name, you know, but when you walk through these places and you see these ridiculously low prices, I want you to ask yourself, you see, let's take a scroll saw, for example, that you see in Harbor Freight. When you see this saw sitting on the shelf for $80, which is actually cheaper than what you could make that same saw, let's say you had the talent to make that same saw here in America, the reason why it's on that shelf cheaper than what you would be able to make it for the raw materials is because China's not paying one nickel in tariff when it comes here and lands on our American shelves. But you see, the problem is much worse. Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution specifically states that tariffs are one of the very few resources that our government is to collect taxation on in order to run the components of the government. So basically what our government has done with the 1913 income tax and with the 1913 income tax and the 16th Amendment is what made it so that they could collect the personal income tax. What our government has done is shifted that burden onto us, the American people, when it was never meant to be on us.
You were talking about the Federal Reserve Act of 1913.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, I mean, basically, I'm trying to think of a nice way to put it. They're sticking it to us really bad here.
Right. What you're saying is basically all of our labor is the only thing that they're taxing because they're not taxing the actual product that we're shipping all over.
Well, no, they're taxing our. I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question.
Yes, they're taxing our people rather than taxing our product.
Right. No, they're taxing.
They're taking taxes out of our paychecks rather than taking taxes from the foreign countries that are buying our goods.
And going to the 16th Amendment, it's not supposed to be taxing. It's technically unconstitutional to tax labor. It's supposed to be taxing profit, and your labor is not profit. But once again, they have silently converted the American people to we the sheeple. We've been a bunch of sheeple while they have dug our grave and dug our grave and dug our grave. And, you know, it was truly the blessing in disguise of Obama, because he was so outrageous in some of the things he did, especially with his Obamacare right off the top, that people started waking up some. I mean, I told people a long time ago not to vote for Rubio and some of these other things, and some of us have been engaged in this process a little bit longer and been paying attention. But truly, with Obama getting in office, we have woken up a lot of people. But it's because we were taught, brainwashed in school, part of the process, part of Agenda 21, control the people by brainwashing them in public education, that, your job is to elect that person and they're going to go represent you, that honorable congressman, woman, and all this other hodgepodge. And never really, and I mean, I remember this all too well in school, we never went to a public meeting. We never went to a public hearing. We never even talked about going there. Your job was to go vote for that representative that was going to do his job, and then you said, oh, okay, that's all you had to do. And that's where the biggest misnomer is. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say the frustrating thing for me is I see the TPP coming down the pike, and it feels very much like they're imposing it upon us and there's nothing we can do. And so it's extremely important that we get out now and tell as many people as possible that this not only exists, but we don't want it. We don't want it at all. It's not that we want parts of it. We don't want even parts of it. So I think they think that because it's 26 chapters long that we're going to just, fix it if we don't like parts of it. No, we don't want it. We don't want to be part of it. And I think that's how we should have expressed ourselves with NAFTA, with GATT, with all of these, quote, free trade agreements that really are power grabs by the corporations to have as much legal power as possible to do just whatever they want. So
well,
go ahead and
let me mention real quick. We've got another caller. I'm going to go to them in just a second. But, with NAFTA, I remember it all too well. I was a Ross Perot person. NAFTA and Ross Perot was not part of the lame stream of the RNC or the DNC. He was out there, a Green Party or whatever it was. He was in the Reform Party something. Reform Party. And I voted for Ross Perot. I'm so sick of it. I've been sick of the two parties for a long time. But Ross Perot told us and tried to warn us there's this big sucking sound, NAFTA, all the jobs to Mexico.
One more second.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Well, what's going on here is when the federal government is allowed to collect all of our taxes, okay, as working people, and put that money into a kitty. Once that money's in the kitty and it's there in limbo and in the federal government's hands, what's important to understand for America is that, A, the federal government then imposes its will upon the states for the states to get that money back that was rightfully theirs to begin with.
Right.
Our founding fathers never wanted that. When the
right.
government collects all that money and gets it together in a kitty, what it does is it creates a bunch of fighting, like we're seeing between the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street. Two people separate, you know, they're two groups of Americans that are fighting with each other over this money. I mean, that's what it all comes down to. You've
actually,
got
it's more about they're two sides of the same coin. The Tea Partiers think the government is the problem, and the Occupy people think the corporations are the problem. But really, it's the government is in bed with and in cahoots with the corporations. But I'm only talking about the top 600 corporations now. Because, you know, if we have if we want a free market and we want to have businesses that should operate the way that you know, I believe in capitalism. I'm not
yep.
against corporations. What I'm against is that our government has either regulated the smaller businesses so much that they can't, they're suffocating, and they've given preferential treatment to these 600 corporations, or they have made it not transparent anymore what these corporations are doing. So that's where you get the banks totally doing things behind our back. We don't even know what the banks are doing.
Right.
So,
well, you see, that's when they collect that money and they've got it there in a pool. If that money wasn't there to begin with, how much do you think the corporations would be spending in order to lobby our government leaders if there was no money there for them?
Oh,
and
they,
you know what?
They make plenty of money off of their businesses. They're not there to do, I mean, of course they're there to grab some of that. I mean, of course, that's what subsidies is all about. They want that money too. But the subsidies are small compared to corporate profits, not just from what they're able to make off of their, you know, like Google, for example, the perfect example. They make so much money off of advertising. But they hide the tax through this double Irish taxation scheme that works really well for them because they don't have to pay one iota to the United States, even though this was originally a United States a company that started here. So if you think that they're expecting government money, you know, Google, no. They want the preferential tax treatment that they can get by working the system. They're
well,
working
the governmental
laws in different, whatever country gives them the best tax treatment, that's where they go.
Oh, okay. You're hitting on something there. But what you're missing that I'm saying is that if the government extends that tax break to Google, okay, when Congress sets a budget, they've got X amount of dollars they need to meet. So by extending that extra tax break to Google, you're raising the rest of our taxes across the board,
right,
because you're
right.
because you're giving that preferential treatment. And if that money wasn't there to begin with, there wouldn't be the great swelling of the EPA and all some of the stupid laws that they pass, and there wouldn't be OSHA with some of the very stupid laws that they pass. It's government has grown to this size since 1913 due to the personal income tax. And it's just, to me, the more I look at things, I'm very like-minded with you guys, so I don't want to seem like I'm a know-it-all either. It's just the more that I look at things, it seems that the preferential tax treatment and the personal income tax is what's created this whole problem in this country right now. And I appreciate the time greatly, and I'll be standing by on the chat. I could always call back in or something if somebody had a question or so on or so forth, but I invite anybody to contact me.
Yeah, before you go, let me ask you one quick question.
Yep.
What are you actually doing out there right now to try to change it? What kind of actions or, that's kind of been what we've been discussing starting last week a little bit more aggressively. People need to start taking action. Now we know what's going on. Now what are we going to do about it? So what kind of groups are you working with? Have you filed any kind of complaints against the stuff? What have you done to try to or share information, because that's obviously key too.
Well, for one, I signed a complaint with the Securities Exchange Commission over my mistreatment through Google, and I basically requested to know how a American company could give unfair preferential treatment to a company based in Thailand. The Securities Exchange Commission got back to me and basically told me that I was involved in a personal contract between myself and not Google, with eBay. And they said the terms of the contract subjected me to this treatment. And So that's one venue I tried. I obviously realized very quickly I wasn't going to get anywhere with that. But I think that probably the best way to go about things for people in our situation that see what's coming down the pipe at us would be to try like the Dickens to take and educate the American people. I've got so many people right now that I've talked to that honestly believe that our jobs left due to wages. And there couldn't be anything further from the truth. As the aforementioned earlier by me, if I pick up my business and I go to China, I'm eligible for corporate welfare from America. I get corporate welfare from China. The heck, in China, I get my energy for free. I get free heat. I get free electricity to run my machines. And then when I send my stuff, my product back to America, I don't have a tax imposed on me. So I get the best of all worlds, especially seeing that I'm able to remain quote-unquote American-based, enjoy the patent copyright laws here in America. I mean, there's just so many reasons for me to move to China that it's when you hear the Republicans say we need tax breaks here to generate business, it's just absurd that they could even say that.
Yeah, it's a joke.
There's so many people out there that believe the media spin, and that's what I tried to do with that little short film that I put at the bottom of your page there. I tried to take and just to show people the reasons and what I would enjoy if I took and moved the jobs from here in America to China. And
I really like what you're saying, because you're absolutely right. Education is number one in my book. What I've done on my website is I started a nonpartisan presidential debates amongst the candidates who are running besides Obama and Ron Paul and, the mainstream people. These are people who are talking about how we need to raise tariffs so that we don't have just free trade. And also, we have a presidential candidate. Now, I'm not endorsing anyone because I have to remain unbiased. But we have presidential candidate Harry Braun, who's running on a platform of doing what should have been done probably about 100 years ago, starting a hydrogen economy instead of a gasoline economy. And he actually has a 5-year plan to where we can switch over and then be the biggest exporter of energy in the world. And we would do it because, as you know, the country that people have come through to for over 150, 200 years as their last bastion of freedom. The people who've come here are always the most, the toughest, in some cases the smartest, but mostly the most industrious people have come to the United States because they knew they could find freedoms here that they couldn't find in their in their country, and that's what makes America great. Well, we have to capitalize on that because we have some of the greatest human capital in the world, and be the forerunners of this hydrogen economy. So we have answers in the pipeline that aren't even being talked about because everyone's watching the news instead of really sharing what I feel is the answer, the real answers to our problems in this country. If you just go on writeindependent.org and click on the right, there's a blue button that says watch the fifth presidential debate. I have over 130 questions that I've posed to these candidates, and you would be surprised at the answers. It's so refreshing, first of all, to have an unscripted debate, and second of all, to have people who are actually putting out there some excellent solutions, not like what you hear from Romney and Obama.
Well, you just opened up a can of worms with me there, because because of the fact that the only reason our kids are dying overseas right now in the desert is due to our government's ability to tax fossil fuel. That is the only reason why our kids are dying overseas in the desert, and that's the length that our government's willing to go to tax us. And the reason being is because if they weren't willing to go to that length, they would allow tax-free production and sale of alcohol on our family farms throughout this country. The family farms would become basically a gas station that you could pull up to with your car. It's absolutely absurd what's going on, and I can't believe the American people don't see it. But through education and helping people understand, you know, the unfair trade practices, I'm very optimistic that we could turn the country back around, but it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of effort to dispel the media lies that are out there, such as our jobs left because of wages. It's going to take a lot of work, and I'm just hoping that things could turn around, that it's not too late for us.
Well, I'm really glad that you joined the conversation today. It sounds like you're really smart and you know what's going on. And it's so true that the media, you can't go there as your source of information anymore. It's a show. It's a dog and pony show. That's why, Sally, I'm so grateful for you. Can we take another? Thank you so much. What was your name, caller?
I'm Marty, and I thank you guys very much for making the show available for people and for taking my call.
Thank you so much, Marty.
Well, thank you. I'll be watching you out in the chat room. If you decide to call back in, feel free to do so. And we've got Bruce. It looks like Bruce was having some telephone issues earlier today. Bruce Olson from the Arizona Sentinel. Hey, Bruce, how are you doing this evening?
Good. Am I live?
Yes, you are.
You are on the air.
Yeah, I got my phones fixed about 4:30 here. Good discussion. Great discussion. I want to comment a little bit on Glass-Steagall and then go into where I think we're headed here. But, when Clinton repealed Glass-Steagall, during that time and right after that time, he went to the major banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman, and the rest of them, and he said that if you guys will expand your operation to the states and buy up community banks, I'll see to it that we finance these subprime loans. And that deal right there is when he made that agreement. If you look across the country, you'll see Bank of America everywhere. You'll see Chase Bank, and I've been with Chase forever. But, you know, that deal right there, when they went out and bought up community banks, and then they allowed the banks to not only do lending, but investments. And that's what Glass-Steagall did. It prevented banks from being investment banks. If I took my money down to a bank and deposited it, that bank could not invest it in Wall Street. That all changed when Glass-Steagall went away. And so, therefore, you wound up with the credit default swaps and the derivatives and all this stuff. And when the guy over in Europe the other day said, hey, America started this, he was absolutely right. It goes right back to Bill Clinton. And when Paulson and Bush walked down the steps after they got the go-ahead for the TARP, and they sent that $4.6 trillion to Europe, it was obvious that that money went over there to reimburse those bankers, the bankers themselves, who had bought into this thing. And I can assure you, I'll bet you the biggest stake in Amarillo, that those bankers in Europe told Bush and Paulson, if you don't reimburse us for those dollars we invested in your credit default swaps, we're coming for you. And but the other thing here is, when Roth ran, I worked for the campaign in Tulsa.
That's great. Roth Perot?
Yes. And matter of fact, I got a closet full of shirts and hats, if that means anything. But anyway, at that period in time, there was a lot of discussion about America moving into a service economy. And I was in business for myself in those days, and I could see it. I could see it coming. And, the elites wanted to drive down the middle class and basically lower the standard of living for the middle class and raise the standard of living for the elites or the politicians or the major bankers. And that was so obvious to me in what I did for a living. And so when NAFTA came about and then later CAFTA, and Judy, you mentioned this, that the Chamber of Commerce is in favor of these trade agreements. Well, look, they've always been in favor of these trade agreements. You know, I was invited to speak at a chamber meeting in Tulsa one time, and not as a member, but somebody they were trying to recruit. And I told them, as long as you support these trade agreements that are going to kill the jobs in America, you're never going to see any money from me in your dues box. I went to Mexico several years ago on a mission to find out more about the coyotes when I was in the Minutemen program. But while I was down there, I discovered this. I was sitting in a hotel that a guy had built, and he had built it with Mexican labor. He was in the process of building another one, and when NAFTA came through, he lost his labor force because his good labor, the people that knew how to frame and hang steel and pull wire and run sheetrock, they discovered that instead of making $4 and $5 and $6 an hour, they could go to the United States. And in Tulsa, we were paying framers at that time, during Ross Perot's run, we were paying framers right after NAFTA, or I'm sorry, not during Ross Perot, but when after NAFTA was signed into law by Bill Clinton, we were paying framers in Tulsa $21 an hour. And the guy I was sitting there having lunch with said, NAFTA destroyed commercial construction in Mexico. It destroyed agriculture in Mexico. It's slowly come back. But there was a period there when people in Mexico had buildings that they were building. They had to come up to the United States to get qualified people to go down there and finish the buildings because they were in the process, and they couldn't let them sit there and rot. So this thing is not going to change. I don't believe you're ever going to change. And I love everybody's desire to change these politicians, but I've watched this thing. I'm 67, and I'm still here. But I've watched this thing and paid attention to it since I first went into business for myself in 1974. It's not Obama. It's not Bush. It's not Bush Senior. It's not Bill Clinton. It's not Jimmy Carter. It's not Lyndon Johnson. It's not Ronald Reagan. It's every dadgum one of them, every single one of them. I can point you to tax policies that every one of those presidents signed on to, from the Community Reinvestment Act for Carter to Reagan's amnesty program and when he screwed up commercial property in 1986, and I can go on and on and on and on.
You could say that our government has been a puppet government of the rich and wealthy since day one, really.
Exactly. And it's not going to change. There's only one way we're going to change this. And on CNBC every morning, and I watch these financial sites and blogs and this, that, and the other, we are at or have gone over the cliff and don't know it. There's a whole other set of arms resetting as we speak, and it's trillions of dollars. And this economy is going to crash. We are Greece and don't know it. And the fact is, we're worse than Greece because we're talking about many more dollars. And when the American people run out of food on the shelves, if oil had hit $5, it would have been right now. We'd been experiencing this, and they've prevented that from happening. To kick the can down further down the road and into another administration. Obama wants to see this collapse happen in the next administration, but there is a major effort by the elites to remove manufacturing, making anything in the United States, and make it in China. I heard your fellow there talking about doing things, going over to China. I was involved in something like that just a few months ago, and I can tell you he's absolutely right. Donald Trump, bless his heart, he's the only one that has hammered on this tariff business with China, and he says he's convinced, that Romney's going to go there. I don't think so, not for a second. And frankly, my position is, I love Ron Paul. I'm going to write him in. But even if Ron Paul got in there, it's not going to change, and for one reason. It's because our government is a corporation. Our states are a corporation. Our counties are a corporation. Our cities are incorporated. And you and I, because we have a birth certificate, a driver's license, a Social Security number, passport, whatever, we are agents and we are corporations. There's only one way we're going to fix this. And it isn't going to happen, I don't believe, until the economy collapses, the stores are empty, the gas tanks are empty, you can't buy fuel. And I went through that thing in 75. I don't know how many of y'all did, or 74.
I did.
Okay. Remember those lines? I remember them well. I was in the airplane business, and getting aircraft fuel was tough. And when that happens again, and I'm convinced it's going to, and I think we're going to see it after the next election, nothing Romney can do is going to stop it, because the trillions of dollars of debt. Meredith Whitney, a Wall Street analyst, and Sally, if you get tired of hearing me, just tell me to shut up. Meredith Whitney has been telling Wall Street for 2, maybe 3 years now that these municipal bonds are going to fail. Now, I pay a lot, since I ran for governor out here, and I pay a lot of attention to what the situation is with our budget out here. 3 years ago, when I ran for governor, the politicians down at the Capitol and people had talked about the budgets and so forth were telling everybody we were $35 billion in debt. The truth of the matter was we were $44 billion in debt. We are now, 3 years later, $66 billion in debt.
Well, now, the Fed holds a lot of that debt.
No,
I mean,
sir. No, ma'am.
Are you talking about debt?
I'm talking about
nothing
state,
to do with the Fed.
I'm talking about state debt. Our debt. $66 billion. Every man, woman, and child with with a number in this state owes $10,000 to this state. There's only one way we're going to fix it, and that's to end these corporations. When I ran, I said the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to file bankruptcy. I knew I wasn't going to get elected, but that was the truth. If these states would run around and do two things, there's only two states in the country that I know of that are still debt-free, and that's Nebraska and Montana. And I think Montana's about to run out of money because he's making some terrible mistakes up there. But the two things that we've got to do, maybe three, is we've got to end the corporate status of the counties, the cities, counties, and states. End it. Say we're done. To get rid of the debt, they're going to have to file bankruptcy. Now, Stockton, California, filed yesterday. There was another town in Northern California a couple of years ago that was looking at bankruptcy and unincorporating. I prevented this community I live in from incorporating several years ago. If we had done that, we'd be bankrupt today. So we've got to get rid of the corporate status, and we've got to do away with the two-party system. And the only way to do that is when this economy collapses, the American people will run up and unregister to vote.
Well, there is a way to, I mean, you're talking about extreme circumstances.
That's
and
right.
There's so many things that can be done before that. Now, I'm not an economist, but I advocate taking and redistributing or having everyone turn in their dollars, which is a poor currency now, for a greenback. Let's just call it a greenback. And make it backed by the government again instead of the Fed. And all those people who walked away with money into foreign governments and traded it in for whatever currency they wanted, euros or whatever, they're not going to have anywhere to go anyway. So they're going to have to come back and get greenbacks from us. But they're all going to get taxed for walking away with some people billions of dollars in one account. If you want to come spend your money back in the United States, you're going to get taxed on those billions of dollars, and you're going to have to put it flush it back into the
system. Well,
that sounds
good, Judy. But how are you going to implement that? Because you're not in control, and you can't get.
No, I'm saying if we had a president who understood how to do this, because you can't just take money away from the hedge funders that walked away with billions of dollars. You just can't take it away. But you can tell them, look, if you don't put this money into circulation, we will have to tax you, because money needs to flow in order for it to work. It's not a workable system if a few people have a lot of it and everybody else has very little. And that's exactly what they've done.
Who's going to tell them?
Well, that's why the government has to step in, because obviously you can't have individuals run on to, you know, hedge funders and say, well, you got to give me your money, right? But it kind of makes sense that, I mean, if our government was operated in the public good, which is what it really was supposed to be about, if our government was the way it was founded, except, you know, the way they wrote the laws were obviously in favor of rich, wealthy white men, if our government were even more equitable than it was originally founded, with a gender unbiased constitution, then we would be able to retrust our government again and have, because it's not just in God we trust, in people we trust. We have to have, first of all, people who we can trust. And the only way we can have, I know it sounds horrible, but the only way we can really trust people is to check on them. We can't just put people in office and expect them to do the job that we voted them in office to do. We have to send private investigators after them, make sure they're not taking bribes and taking you know, we have to check them.
Who's going to pay for that?
Well, I'm saying if our government were run from the standpoint that the representatives were not allowed to take bribes, we might actually be able to have a representative democracy. I know people that say, let's forget the representative democracy. That can never work because it's just set up for bribery. But I think there is a way, as long as the people are in charge. And see, one of the reasons we're in the shape we're in is people stopped paying attention to what the representatives were doing. They weren't reading the bills. They don't have time for that. And when you give up your involvement in your government, the government by nature will become corrupt. So that's we own the government. We actually have the government that we, you know, we deserve the government we have because we have been asleep at the wheel. I'm not saying you or I. I'm saying the vast majority of the people who sit on the, you know, couch and watch TV and really aren't paying attention. How did these laws get passed that, I mean, first of all, how did the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 get passed? That was the first mistake. Why would you give a private institution control over printing money and then loaning it to your own government? That is the worst idea I've ever heard.
Well, at the end of the day...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
At the end of the day, you have to understand that when they rewrote the Constitution, it became a corporation. And as long as we are all slaves to that corporation, and we are, you're not going to change it. I've had several friends that went to Washington, D.C., and got elected as representatives and or senators. The second day they're there, they're going to a caucus meeting, and they decide who's going to go to what committee. And they're also told how to cut the mustard. And
right.
If they don't play ball like Rand Paul didn't for a while, eventually now he has.
They'll be run out of town, right?
That's exactly right. And the corporation, the United States, Inc., controls that. And the only way we're going to do this, I listen to solutions and ideas and all sounds good, but you are under the jurisdiction of a company. It's just like if you go to work for John Deere and you join the union, you're going to do what they tell you or you're not going to work there. And that's what this is all about. It's been all about raising the elites and lowering the middle class. That's why these trade agreements are out there. That's why NAFTA was put in place. That's why they went through the process of eliminating Glass-Steagall, because they knew that these banks would make these liar loans and subprime loans and 120% of loan value loans and all this nonsense, and they knew that would eventually collapse the system, and it's going to. But
absolutely.
We're going to have to go through that.
You are telling an absolute truth that the system is broken and that we nearly have to go back to square one.
There you go.
And I really like what you're saying. It echoes what... you know, there is kind of an undercurrent. There's a lot of people, you're not the first one who I've talked to lately, who said, we absolutely need to change the system because we cannot fix it. It is so broken. So we do need to go back to square one. And I like what you're saying. If you look at the government as a corporation and it fits the bill, then we need to restructure it from square one. We cannot do it with the representatives we have, but we could do it with some of the people that are running for president that you never hear of. This is why, you know, one of my goals with my website, first of all, was education, trying to get the people to understand there is another way. But the other was to my husband was he's in the infomercial business, and what Ross Perot did that was so brilliant was he explained the debt to people for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in the country woke up to what that debt meant. So he got a lot of, he got a huge following. And the only reason I think that he lost is that he dropped out of the first race. Remember the first time he ran? Because
yep.
his daughter was getting married?
Yep.
Am I saying things correctly? And he dropped out because he got afraid that this would ruin her big day. And then he went back into the race, and by that time he lost a lot of steam. But one of the smartest things he ever did was buy airtime for half-hour chunks and explain and educate people. And what I want to do with this website is raise enough money to do a six-week campaign. I hope the powers that be aren't listening to your program. that explains the Gram-Leach-Bliley Act, that explains this Trans-Pacific Partnership, that explains how trade agreements really work for the benefit of the corporations and not so much the people, and gives them options, makes them start at least discussing ways in which we can make things better, because we really just need to start with a discussion. And I really think the internet is the way that we are going to reach across the country. You know, we're not really that divided, Republicans and Democrats. I really think people just want the basic things. They want a roof over their head. They want the dignity of being able to earn a living and provide food for their families. And then they want to be able to live in the manner in which they see fit. So that freedom to live your life as you see fit. You know, pretty much everyone in the country could agree with that.
Okay,
and
Charlie's out there. Excuse me. Charlie's out there, and I'm going to go to him in just a minute. Excuse me,
okay.
Go ahead and finish that, and then I got a comment. You were finishing something up there.
Oh, no, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, going back to the Ross Perot thing, there's two things I find really interesting. Ross Perot and Ron Paul were very, very similar in many respects. And, of course, they both also happen to come from Texas. I got that out there for you, Doreen. I think it's interesting that you got two of the most, what I would call, fiscally accountable and the truest of the statesmen, the American statesman status from Texas, and where they were just so similar in their core beliefs. And the other thing, my mother had followed Ross Perot for years. She had listened to him on different talk shows and stuff like that. And as she always told me, and she's passed away now, but she told me many times, people tried to get Ross Perot to run for the president so many times, and he didn't want to do it. And things were getting so bad with the NAFTA thing and everything else that he felt somewhat obligated to run. He did run. He really, deep down in his heart, he didn't want to be president, but he felt obligated to get the message out there. So he took it as a way to try to educate people. And, knowing what my mother had said about him in the past, kind of led itself to some of the games, even after the situation with his daughter and that thing. Then the person he had picked for his vice president at that time wasn't exactly giving him a boost either. So I never thought he truly wanted to get elected, but he wanted to be out there trying to help people understand what was going on. I mean, after what my mother told me, that kind of made sense to that. But I do kind of think it's interesting that you had Ron Paul and Ross Perot, both very similar in so many ways, and both from Texas. Let's go ahead and get Charlie in here. He is Charlie, you wanted to chime in?
Oh, yeah. It's been a great show so far, and I hope I don't implode it.
if you're not nice, I'll just hit the mute, and then I'll tell you, Charlie, we can't hear you. Go ahead, Charlie.
Anyway, the biggest problem we have in America now is naturally dishonesty in our elected positions on a federal, state, and local level. The Constitution of the United States was not designed for dishonesty in a corrupt government, representative government. The Constitution was designed by 56 men, of which 52 believed in God or were devout Christians. Four were atheists who also believed in a strong moral standard for this great country. And that's what kept America going for so many years. But now what's happened is the devil's advocates have overtaken most of the elected positions. And so when we the people wake up to this fact and we start doing things and start taking action and not just talking about the problem, but actually putting them in where we start becoming a pain in the butt and in the neck of our elected officials, things will start war changing around. And that can be done now. One of the greatest things we have going for us is the GO process. It is a process. It's not a Tea Party. But when I went to my very first Tea Party situation here in Orlando on the 15th of April in 2009, there were some Republicans in there already, but it was mostly people who really wanted to do something for this great country. And they were not all Republicans. They may have belonged to it, but it was not what you might call a Republican organization. Now we have a lot of Republicans who have imploded the Tea Party movement, just like they did the Reform Party. Pat Buchanan, a staunch Republican, got into the Reform Party when I was in the Reform Party almost from the beginning. And I saw how he sequentially came into the state of Florida, and he went to the different meetings of the Reform Party with his group of people, and they all signed on and all that, so they became the dominating group of that meeting. And then they would vote for his agenda and not necessarily for the agenda of the Reform Party. And that's what started to implode it. And then when we went to Michigan, they voted for Kagan to be the national director of the Reform Party, and nobody would help him. They wouldn't even turn over the books to him, and so the party eventually imploded. But it was caused by the Republicans, and that's what I think is happening with the Tea Party. Although there are so many staunch Tea Party members who believe in the Tea Party as taxed enough already, and they want to make the change, that they are still going to the parties and they're still doing their own individual thing. But what I like now is the fact that we have these different groups doing things, like Arizona Sentinel, Judy's, your group, which I hope you mentioned your website again because I forgot it. And go ahead, mention it.
It's Wright, W-R-I-T-E, independent.org.
Right.
And I do applaud the Tea Party. The Tea Party spirit is a lot of what is right with this country. We need people who get that something is very wrong.
Right.
And they want to fix it.
That's right. But the thing they have to watch out for when they go to these tea parties is to make sure that they don't get into this conservative talk from the Republican Party, because it's the Republican Party and the Democrat Party that have caused the split in the way the people are. We got the Republicans and the Democrats, and we the people are split, but the upper echelon is not split. They're working together hand in hand in Washington and in the states and in the cities, all working together, Republican next to Democrat, but we the people are more of a divided nature. And the Tea Party
are bringing us
together.
I think that's actually a contrivance that the media has purported, that
right.
We are so divided. I actually think that we have more in common than the media will have you believe.
Oh, yeah.
And that they really punch up those differences. And what we desperately need to do right now is think as a country in order to save it.
Good. I'm glad you said that.
We can't think as factions.
Right. I'm glad you said that, because that's what we have to get across to the people. When you go to these tea parties, just be very alert to the fact that you could be there and it could be being run by the Republicans. You can listen to what they say. But just remember one thing, this is your country, and it's not the party's country. If you're
right.
a party politician...
What you're talking about is party loyalists...
Yeah, party faithful.
...will tell you that there's only one way, and that's the Republican way. And I'm saying, Actually, what's really fascinating is, I have this website that anybody can run for office. It doesn't matter if you're...
Right.
Reform, Tea Party, Green, Libertarian, you can run on this website. And what I find is most of the people are complaining about money in politics, and they're saying they want it out. And it doesn't matter what party they're from. They're complaining about the same thing.
Got a
question. They know that money is corrupting our government, and they are not party. See, this is the interesting thing about the Republicans, actually, even more so than the Democrats, is if you run against the party leader, they call you an incumbent. Well, both parties do it, actually.
Right.
They call you, not an incumbent, they call you an insurgent, and they don't want you around. So a lot of the Republicans who finally get it, that unless you're the party leader, you don't count, they're pissed.
Right.
And God bless them. I love these people who are running on this on my website because they are the ones who are going to change things for the better.
Can I tell you a story?
Yeah.
In Arizona, about 4 years ago, the Libertarian Party closed their primaries. The Republican Party is talking about doing it. Don't know that they've done it yet, but they've been talking about it. When I ran as a Libertarian to get away from John McCain because I worked for Don Goldwater when he ran in 06 and saw what McCain did to him, which wound up giving us Janet Napolitano for governor again. Well, during my little deal, during the primary, prior to the primary, I refused to take any money. But I did 35 events. And when people would visit with me after the event, they would say, you know, we'd like to contribute to you. And I'd say, no, I'm not going to take any money unless I make it through the primary. But here's the deal you have to understand. If you're a Republican, you can't vote for me in the primary unless you're a Libertarian. And I converted quite a few Republicans to Libertarians, but not near enough. So at the end of the day, the Republican Party and the Democrat Party control the primaries.
Oh, you don't know the half of it. I mean, I hear you so loud and clear. We have what's called a top two primary in California. That means only the top two vote getters get to run in the general, and all the write-ins be damned.
Mm-hmm. Did you know?
Shalene
Nightingale?
Worse. What did you say?
Did you know Shalene Nightingale?
No, who's that?
She ran for governor in California.
Oh, okay, no.
Good girl.
You know, it's just the parties paid to get that to happen, the top two. And now it's a law in Washington State, Louisiana, and California. And I'm sure they're just going to go state by state and try to pass it because all they have to do is spend enough money and they can get that law passed because people are snowed by what they see on TV.
Well, that's why Sally and I have that complaint, we the people versus the ballot box establishment, and that is an excellent addition to it, but it doesn't apply here in the state of Florida. The thing that we the people have to do is remember one thing. We the people own the airwaves above our property that is used by the mainstream media, ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox. A long time ago, we should have demanded equal access to the airwaves by every candidate that is getting some kind of a backing. Not no 10,000 petitions or $10,000 to get on the ballot, but you want to run for office like you have people contacting your website, they would be able to get on, and if they start getting people interested in them, they would be given equal time, just like the regular incumbents are given. Because those are our airwaves.
We shouldn't be paying
ABC, CBS, NBC for a patriotic, a very patriotic function of America, which is called voting for the people we want to represent us. Our people who want to go should be able to go through a process like the GO process, where they take tests they study the, they understand the Constitution, then they are qualified by a group of their citizens to be able to get on the ballot or to actually, you know, start going into the various hobnobs and getting on TV. Once we do this vetting process, which will be done properly by the by your neighbors, then our airwaves should be used every election time equally by everybody who has been qualified through this process. That way there is no favoritism. If the Republicans want to put theirs up there, that's fine. The Democrats can do that. Any party can do it. But those who don't want to belong to a party, they'll still be able to be vetted by something like the GO process. And this will really open it up and make it fair to everybody. And that GO process can be done for senators, congressmen, and every position.
Well, you're going to have to figure out some way then to get the chairman of the FCC not to be an employee of the president.
Well, he's a president. Actually, he is an employee of we the people because we pay his wages. The president doesn't.
Well, but he nominates him. He runs through the Senate process, and that you know, I love the notion, but until,
I know.
I need to cut in here for just a minute, guys. This goes back to the same situation when it comes to the judicial process, trying to get justice out of a crooked system, trying to get the FCC to do it when it's been corrupted too. We have corruption, the cancer. I mean, this is massive cancer throughout this whole system. And I don't want to get too much. We're down to about 15 minutes. The reason I cut in here real quick, we are down to about 15 minutes. And is there anything else we want to talk about on the Trans-Pacific Partnership? Because we kind of drifted off on some of this other stuff.
I want to say one thing on that.
Okay.
The Supreme Court missed a golden opportunity the other day when they come down on 1070. All they would have had to have done is said, look, the guy in the White House is ineligible. When he took the oath of office, we're not sure what his real name is, so we're not sure he really took the oath of office. If the Florida judge wakes up down there and stops asking stupid questions like he did the other day and removes him from the ballot and something else happens, or even if he gets on the ballot, the majority of the American people now know, I'm convinced, they know this guy is not eligible. Whoever replaces him, whether it's Romney or Ron Paul, and I'm not too sure that Ron Paul's not going to pick up a bunch of delegates in Tampa. But whoever replaces him, all he's got to do is say, as soon as the inauguration is over, say, look, Obama was an ineligible president. He was not our president. Now, so whatever he did, from Obamacare to these executive orders, is null and void.
In other words, we can repeal the NDAA, the National Defense Appropriations Act.
And these treaties, I mean, the treaties are they're nothing anyway. The next guy can take care of that in a heartbeat. But anyway, if Romney loves his country, or whoever loves his country, the first thing out of his mouth should be, Obama was ineligible. He had no business in the White House, and everything he did, we are going to unravel it and get rid of it.
Well, Obama's not going to unravel anything, especially NDAA gives him basically it takes away habeas corpus and due process, and that's what they want.
Well, the Patriot Act did that too, but at the end of the day, we got a shot after the inauguration, or we're going to go off, we're going to hit the bottom, the economy is going to collapse, the dollar's worth 4 cents, they've reduced the value of the dollar to 96%, if it goes down to 1.5 to 2, it's over. And we're now at 116% of GDP, our debt, I forget now. That's just not workable. Arizona's bankrupt. There's a bunch of other states that are bankrupt. There's no way out of it. We've got this solar company down here in Phoenix. The executive sold their stock the other day and took a hike. And, they're still down there, but they've sold their stock. They put millions of dollars in their pocket, Now, Jan Brewer was all excited about that, did the ribbon cutting, and, oh, boy, First Solar's going to be the savior of Arizona. No, I don't think so. Anyway, one of two things has got to happen. We either got a guy comes in here after inauguration and unravels this whole mess, or we're going to hit the bottom, and then the American people will pay attention because the shelves will be empty and the gas lines will be long and there won't be any jobs, and manufacturing will be done, and the country will collapse, and then we're going to have to find 56 men to put this sucker back together again.
And I hope it's not just men.
Thing. And there's a third thing. We can do this all faster because of everybody, like we have talking now, are working on it. I don't give up hope.
I'm glad to
hear
you say that.
I'm 77, and I believe I've served this country. My brothers and my father served this country. My mother served working in a war plant. My sister worked at Kresge's because everybody went to work at the war plant. We were a country of patriots working for the good of this country during World War II. And let me tell you, right now we have a world war right there in Washington, D.C. And also, we have a treasonous administration and Congress in regards to the drug war that we have been fighting for many, many years. And we now have the proof that there is a drug war, and aiding and abetting the enemy is an act of treason. And so Fast and Furious, as far as I'm concerned, was a treasonous act by those involved in it in the ATF and the Obama administration and the members of Congress who have failed to take the proper action.
But don't forget,
in regards
Charlie,
to it.
Don't forget, Obama's put 48%+ of the American people on food stamps. They're going to vote for Obama. The other thing is
of them are still smart, and they're getting the word too that it's not coming from Obama.
Okay, and on that note, I've got to let Doreen. She hasn't been
good
on
show,
in a
guys.
Couple weeks.
Yeah,
we better get her on here real quick, and we're just about finished. Hey, Doreen.
Hi, y'all.
Hi there.
Great show.
Hi, Doreen.
Glad you showed up, Bruce. I was beginning to wonder. Speaker is Janet, I think. I'm sorry, I'm horrible at names. CRS.
Judy. Yeah.
Great job, Judy.
Thank you. I will be
visiting your website. Now, you were talking about the tea parties that you go to, and the rhinos or the Republicans have come in. I'm going to put it this way. It doesn't matter what party has come into the tea party. What matters is the fact that they're not only tuned in to worrying about their tax rate. They have to be willing to take on anything and everything in their communities and in the government that we need to work on.
Right.
This is not a party thing. And this little group here in my little town that I belong to, I quit them, because out of 100-some-odd members we have, 5 of us weren't only concerned about taxes. They didn't want to work on anything else. They only wanted to worry about their tax rate, and they wanted to worry about when their next rally was going to be.
Yep.
They didn't want to work. Now, I belong to TeaParty.org, which is not that way. And I suggest to Dale we change the name Tea Party, because everybody's saying, oh, the Tea Party's not this and the Tea Party's not that. The hell we aren't. Just change the name to the Damn Mad Patriots.
What do you say?
That's
I think that's a good idea. Damn
that's
Mad
great.
Patriots.
He liked
Tea Party. Yeah.
He liked the idea. Because
yeah,
I told him, as long as you're connected to the Tea Party, as long as you're using Tea Party, you and I both know what that term means, but the ignorant public out there don't get it, and the news media isn't helping them. I said, put it to something that people have no, there's not a doubt in your mind what we stand for.
Right. That's a great idea.
It reminds me of that clip from Network. I'm mad as hell and we're not, you know, get out of your window and start screaming, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore. I'm mad
right.
as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And that's how
exactly.
you got to deal.
Exactly. That's what I want to get accomplished.
And
so Dale's
like
out on the road right now. When he comes back, I'm going to hit him up again about it.
I like what you said about it's not just about taxes. It's really about everything.
Well,
right?
That's what the Tea Party it started out to be. That was when they started as primary concern. But a lot of people in the Tea Party, that's not their concern. They want to work on everything else we're sitting here talking about tonight. But they are outnumbered in most of the Tea Parties by people who only want to sit on their butts.
Yeah, those are called the party faithful.
Oh, I got other names for them.
Well, you know, it really comes back to education again, because those people would be your ally if we would just educate them and give them a more rounded approach, a more rounded
right.
view of things.
Very true, but a lot of them don't even want to hear it.
Well, that's true. I think the most frustrating thing about running a website that's trying to fix Washington is that people don't even want to hear about politics. And it's refreshing to talk to people like you because you care, first of all, and also you want to know what people are thinking out there so we can make a difference.
That's
right.
I hope you want to make a difference.
I want to know what's going on because there's no way I can make every website in the world to learn everything, so I pick find the sites that are going to educate me. And then I was taking it to my Tea Party meetings and trying to educate them, but they didn't want to hear it.
You
well,
know,
some of it has to be not just educational but entertaining because
right.
nowadays people only tolerate little sound bites here.
Well,
there.
Now I can entertain.
I didn't say, wait a minute, come on now.
when Chris Santilli said we need another Tea Party on CNBC that morning, I was listening to it, and everybody behind him started clapping and yeah, you know, we need to do that. And then Dale, of course, picked it up, ran with it. But what we need is somebody like Santilli to come up with another deal like that of some kind, because that thing went viral the next day. I mean, the internet was crazy with hit the video of him saying that on Squawk Box that morning. And, you know, that really did start the Tea Party thing going like crazy. And then Big Army got involved and destroyed it.
The Tea Party has gotten so much bad press now. I think if we just changed it to, like I said, damn mad patriot.
Something with patriots in it, right.
They won't have a doubt about what we're about.
That's right.
And you hit something right on the head, which is certain things go viral, but you don't have any control over that. What I would like to see is something to go viral, but close to the election so that the powers that be don't even have a chance to react to it. And by the time the cat's out of the bag, they're going to be behind the eight ball. And that's the power of the Internet.
Exactly.
So, yeah, thank God for the Internet.
One of the greatest things that's happened to Sally and me, I believe, is the fact that we got involved with Doreen and also Arizona Sentinel with Bruce, Arnie, and Richard. I mean, it's been one of the greatest, and Vicky and Tina. And all of these people that I just mentioned, plus we also have Edna in Citrus County. These are people who have a lot of context. They've been doing it, and I'm saying is the more people that we get attached to it, the better off we're going to be, and things are really going to start perking up within the next 2 months, I would say. Washington and our elected officials are going to start wondering who's got their back, because there's going to be so many people.
Okay. We're down to 2 minutes.
All right. God bless America. God bless our troops. It was a great show, Judy. Thank you very much, and I hope you call in tomorrow on our evening show.
Hey, Sally, would you put Judy's website up somehow?
Yes. In fact, it is on the show page, but I will make sure I send it to you as well.
Okay,
it's,
good.
WriteIndependent.org, and that's right as in WRITE independent.org.
I'll send
that's,
it out.
That's because I was thinking the write-in vote for a new president. I mean, that was the original intent, was just the president, but now we realize we really need to get Congress shaped up, and that's probably we have a better chance of getting
great.
A new Congress in.
That's a great idea, Judy, because all you need is one person to become a live wire in this country like Ross Perot did. And in 2 months, that person could be way at top if he's saying everything that the people want to hear.
Absolutely. Go look at the website and see who's running for president, because there's some really interesting live wires on there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, and they're very smart. There's some really smart people.
Good idea.
Well, thank you. This has been an excellent discussion. We're down to about 30 seconds here. Thank you so much, everybody, for calling in. And definitely check out this TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership. We've got to stop. And also, please tune in to tomorrow night, because we're going to be continuing this discussion. But we'll be starting it at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, our regular time on Thursday. And, of course, tomorrow is Obamacare Day, so we're going to see what's going to happen on that. And on that note, thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Judy, for joining. It's been an excellent discussion. And it looks like Bruce has dropped off. Doreen, I know you're still out there. Thank you for calling in. And
thank you,
Marty, thank you for your discussion. And Judy, one last word?
Just thank you, Sally, for doing this. This is an amazing platform for us to get our voices heard.
Call us tomorrow.
Thanks so much.
Judy, call us tomorrow.
Okay. I got you on my calendar.
Good deal, right.
Okay.
The more people calling in, just short little spurts in there, it's great because other people will be calling in on Mondays and Thursdays.
Okay.
Okay, and on that note, we will wrap it up for tonight. Thank you again, and as always, may God bless the USA. Good night.